Welcome to the Hump Day Podcast. My name is Pastor Kevin Robertson, and then yes, it is January 4th, 2017. So I want to wish you a Happy New Year, and our first interview this year is Angela Vicente. So we want to welcome Angela. Welcome, buddy.
And so tell us how you began to get into worship scene. When you graduated with what?
You mean when
college.
I went to school?
Yeah,
I went to school for music.
Okay.
And I've been leading worship since I was about 12 years old.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah, they started me early. Because I knew how to play piano, so my youth pastor at the time taught me how to play chords in a way that would work for church.
Okay.
Because I was just playing classical music at that time. And they needed somebody to lead for youth group, so I started up, and then I started doing it for the adult services,
right,
too.
So you started when you were 12.
Started when I was a kid. Yeah.
Okay, and then you went to adult services?
Yeah, I helped a lot with playing piano and singing.
So you've been leading worship for a long time then.
20 years.
20 years. Have you noticed your perspective when you first started in worship to now, how it's changed?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was a lot simpler for me then because It was just both music and faith were so simple and joyful. And now they're kind of wrought with a lot of questions and additional life experience. So.
Oh, that's interesting. So you said simple, and it's almost like a childlike faith when you were in the worship. And somehow as adults, it gets complicated.
Yeah.
You know, and you're right because we don't have that childlike faith because we start questioning everything. And so, have you noticed that when you went into leading worship, that your faith is questioned, or the way you do worship is questioned, or?
I think it's both.
Okay.
Yeah, I have in the last several years been just re-examining my definitions of everything and really digging deep to figure out what do I believe, not just what I've been taught, but what do I, at the core of me, believe at the end of the day? Not even the things that I tell myself I believe. What do I believe underneath that?
Oh, see, because I look at it this way. I look at a lot of us, when we say we have convictions, they're not convictions, they're idealism. And when we're having this idea of what life should be or what we stand for, but when it gets challenged, it's not really our convictions.
Right.
Because we compromise so much in our life.
Right.
And I was in that too. I was in that stage when I first went to ministry. That I'm going, am I preaching what I really believe? And or am I doing what I was taught to do?
Yeah. And
go ahead.
Well, that's just what makes it a little more difficult now, especially not being able to really simply articulate where I'm at. I think can be very alarming for people to feel like I'm not on a clearly defined team or it's I'm having a hard time articulating right now even. But yeah, there are times when I've had to not sing for worship because I couldn't get on board with the words that I was singing.
Really?
And I felt like a liar. Yeah. And I never want in church it happens, but I don't want to intentionally present something just for the sake of getting through and treating it like a job and like putting on the show because there are much more entertaining shows that either I could put on or people could go to.
Right.
So it's a kind of a waste of people's both time and their trust because people come to church pretty vulnerably to talk about ideas and experience. And so for me to give them a presentation because I think it's what they need or what I should believe but don't quite puts everything in kind of a weird.
That's, you know, it reminds me, do you think that gets to the point that when worship sometimes becomes so inauthentic, inauthentic, where sometimes a worship leader is singing a song they're singing a song, and you're just going, nobody really means what they're singing right now.
Yeah.
Or they say it with deadness in their lives.
Yeah, it's rough. Well, I have two thoughts on that. The first is that I can't really know what people are experiencing, even if it looks like they're not having an experience and they're just kind of going through the motions. For all I know, they're having a really deep emotional experience that I just can't see visibly.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, it can be disheartening to be up there and trying to make a connection with the Holy Spirit and with people, and to kind of facilitate this bridge of music and worship,
mm-hmm.
and feel like it's not really happening. Then I wonder, like, am I ineffective? Am I not actually ushering in the Holy Spirit? Yeah. Am I just trying to do this on my own? Often the answer to that is yes.
Yeah. Well, and I've noticed too, even with preaching,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I could sit there and preach my heart out and I'm looking, why are you sleeping?
Yeah.
Or why are you so disengaged?
That's been me sometimes. I'm sorry.
No,
I'm
not.
So tired.
No, I'm not even looking at you. You're on the side of the sanctuary. When I look at you, just smile and think like you're really listening. But I think Brooke, who is our worship leader in charge of the whole team that's on staff,
mm-hmm.
has told me, you don't know what people are going through. They may be processing something that you said, or something that they're trying to release in their life.
Yeah.
So you can't judge people out in the congregation simply by their facial expression or their body language.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I'm adjusting to.
But on a human level, it's hard to not receive energy back when you're putting out energy.
Yeah.
It's just draining.
Yeah, no, it is. It is draining. Now, one thing that I've known about you, you have this passion for the valuing women.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have multiple conversations about the objectification of women,
mm-hmm.
and how women are the objects of men's pleasures sometimes. And you really, that is such a deep thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
And usually people that have something that is so passionate is because their experience or what they've seen is just tremendously deep.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about the ministries that you've been involved, the ministry that you are involved, and why is it so important to you?
Well, this is so hard for me to... I probably should have just typed this out and read it to you.
No, that's boring.
Yeah, I know.
You just need to slide.
But even from the heart, it's hard for me to put this into words because there are so many intangibles and so many just anecdotal experience things.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when I talk about this, I really want to be persuasive.
Uh-huh.
Several years ago, I don't know how many, I just became aware, perhaps for the first time, that not only were the rules for men and women different, but they were really unfair and stacked against women.
Okay.
And I don't blame men for that. I think that's important to say, mm-hmm. because I think a lot of people, when they think about feminism, are like, okay, man-hating, bra-burning kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's not the case.
Right.
Feminism is simply the thought that men and women should have equal opportunities in society.
Okay.
But that's just not the case.
Right.
Both economically and the way we treat each other socially, the rules for women, the way that they dress and carry themselves, even their affect, the way that their face looks.
Mm-hmm.
There is, by and large, an expectation for women to have a pleasant affect,
mm-hmm.
To smile. And so there's actually a movement with artwork that's criticizing this. Don't ask me to smile.
Okay.
I'm not here to decorate your world.
Oh, really?
I'm not here to look nice for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm another person the same as you. But people, women will get, you know, told on the street, like, hey, baby, smile.
Right.
You know, you look pretty when you smile.
Right.
Well, I'm not here to be pretty. I'm just trying to live my life.
Yeah.
And it seems like such a small thing, but that's really, these moments accrue every day. Like, you have hundreds of these moments, mm-hmm. and they just build up and build up and build up, and you get the idea eventually, like, I'm being watched at all times. I'm being evaluated based on my appearance,
right?
Not based on what I think or what I can offer the world, or my talents or skills. It's based on the way I look. Right. And I think that goes for all people, but that for women, it's
more so for women.
Yeah, it's uniquely focused on us in such a way that puts us at a disadvantage. So we have to dress very carefully, right. because we don't want to be told that we were asking for it if we are assaulted. And as I mentioned to you earlier, yeah. I've been assaulted. I have friends who have been assaulted to, you know, various degrees, and it's heartbreaking. And in the moment, you're just frozen. Like, what could I have done differently? I didn't ask for this.
And the thing is, I've noticed in the counseling that I've done that women like yourself that have been assaulted, there's a massive amount of guilt with them that said, I should have done this, I should have done this. And there's shame, there's guilt. And so therefore, a lot of these incidents of assault or even rape, they don't even report it.
Right.
Because they know that, and the women that I've talked to in my office over the 18 years I've been here, they go, nobody's going to believe me. Mm-hmm. And how it's set up, the system, the legal system, is I'm going to lose.
Yeah.
No one's going to believe me.
Yeah. It's incredibly difficult to pursue justice in those situations. And I know for me, I experienced this on a small scale, I should say, but it was still painful. And I had a deer in headlights kind of feeling mm-hmm. of where time stopped. And I felt like I should say something, but this strong, strong impulse to be polite took over.
Okay.
And that is really challenging for a lot of women, too, is to feel like you... any demonstration of independence and speaking up for yourself can be seen as bitchy mm-hmm. and aggressive when it's just assertive
right.
and independent. And so I felt like I couldn't speak up for myself in that moment when something was happening, and that to do so would be rude because I should have said something earlier and the moment had passed, and now I just had to live with it.
And see, and I've known, this is what I've learned in life. Some of your greatest pain in life can become your greatest ministry or your greatest advocate. So out of this experience of being assaulted yourself and the situations of being set up by men to say you need to act a certain way, look a certain way, be a certain way for me as a man, then you really decided I'm going to get involved in these ministries.
Yeah.
And I think the first ministry you got involved is Treasures.
That's right.
Okay. Tell us about that.
I did a training conference with them over a weekend where I learned basically the story of the sex industry,
uh-huh.
how it came about and what the statistics are. One that's always stuck with me is that the rate of PTSD with women who work in the sex industry is equivalent to that of war veterans.
Okay, wow.
Which is incredible. Mm. I mean, I've been asked before, aren't there some women who enjoy doing this work? And I mean...
And I'm sure there are men, right, that have asked this question?
Yeah.
Okay. No, you know, it's funny because no woman, I'm assuming, would ask a question like this. Because it's almost justification, isn't it? It's almost them saying, well, they like it. This is why they're doing it. And that's not the case that you're finding out.
I mean, that's the fantasy that's being sold. Like, and that's how you sell it. That's how you make money. Right. You look like you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
So Treasures, I wound up going with them to a handful of strip clubs to handle.
Okay, explain what Treasures is first.
Okay, sure. Treasures was founded by Harmony. Her last name is changed now, but her name is Harmony. She is a former stripper.
Okay.
And she left the business and became a Christian. And one day it was just heavy on her heart to reach out to her former friends, former coworkers, and say, I'm thinking of you. You matter. Mm. You're loved. So she left notes on their cars, on their windshields.
Okay.
This developed into a ministry where women collect gifts like lipsticks and hair ties and this sort of thing. And they give them to the girls who work in these clubs, okay, along with a card with a hotline number on it that says, if you ever want support, call us. And it's not trying to get people out of their work. It's not trying to invade these spaces and kind of take over. It's honestly just support. And some women choose to leave the industry, which is awesome, because, you know, their heart is elsewhere. But they, I really love their ministry. So I got to go with them to a few strip clubs and hand out bags. And I didn't wind up partnering with them long term, but I learned so much from them.
Let me ask you this, because I don't think I've ever asked you this in a private conversation. Did it get you mad when you were going there? I mean, to the point that you've been assaulted as a young woman, and you're going, okay, I act this way and act this way. So now you're in a place that is, like, huge in objectification and fantasy and stuff like this. And so did it creep you out? Did you just go, okay, this is sick, and I mean, I don't know how you would feel, but I would just think, oh my goodness, I want to blow up in here.
I didn't feel angry, but there is like a heaviness.
Okay.
And I didn't get very far into the clubs for a couple of them. I only walked directly into one. But there was just, looking at the faces of the workers, just like kind of a zoned out, like, how can you be present for that kind of work? I mean, I think you have to check out psychologically just to preserve yourself.
Yeah. And so now you're involved in a different type of, it's the same kind of a ministry.
There is
similar. Explain that one.
It's called After Hours.
Okay.
And they also hand out gift bags, but it's for prostitutes and also all people who work in prostitution.
Okay.
So we primarily reach out to the girls, but they're also developing something for
Johns.
The Johns, but there's like
the
a school.
And the runners.
We talked about the runners too. So anybody who's involved
What's
in
the
any
school
aspect.
We were saying?
I think it's people who have been prosecuted for
prostitution,
and then they go to like a school. I'm still learning about so many things,
but I'm just fascinated with the thing.
I like that this ministry also has a big heart for the men who are involved, because it's easy to just be angry
or villainize them.
For a long time I was just angry, like, what is this?
You stupid son of a...
But I think that recognizing that everyone in this has been enslaved mentally,
That's
emotionally, spiritually, that we all need redemption is powerful. And it's hard to stay in that space, but that's the truth, is that we all need redemption. We also need justice.
I definitely, but it's a good point to look at somebody not as a villain, but as they're broken as well.
Yeah, they were a kid once too.
Yeah.
They didn't come out of the womb ready to use people and exploit people.
Now, the thing is, you know, for me, and I think in the conversations that we've had, is people have a pattern. And so for you, with being insulted at a young age, and therefore now you, especially when you've gone through such a deep pain, you can really identify other people in that pain, too. For me, I can tell when somebody's going through a divorce. I can tell. You can just read the book.
You knew when I was going through a major breakup.
You can tell because your experience is, you can read the bodies. You can know that part of them is dying right now. And so I'm sure the same thing with you when it comes to, you know, I can tell that woman's been insulted, the way she acts, the way she responds, and stuff like this. And so when you take your pain and you reach out, it doesn't just reach out to ministry, but it's affected your life with men too as well.
Yeah. And again, I don't feel anger. I want the world to be different, and I want to be a part of that change and in any way that's possible. And this is not really a popular topic because it's so divisive. everyone has different experiences, mm-hmm. so not everybody believes that women are treated differently.
Right.
Mostly, if you're not a woman, it's easy to think so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I crave the world where we value each other equally and where we don't have different rules
right.
and have victim blaming, where we don't live in a rape culture, where it's just normal to make jokes about
right.
rape-centered things. I mean, it's heavy.
Well, you know, I'm just thinking when you said that, a lot of men do a lot of sexual jokes.
Yeah.
Like
it's normalized.
Yeah, if somebody is, you know, because we hear this all the time, that on the TV, oh, she just needs to be late.
Oh, geez.
And therefore she won't be so angry. She'll chill out. Mm-hmm. And you look at that and you go,
That's control right there. Yeah. It's like, I don't like what she's bringing across. I think she's getting out of line.
Yeah.
So what she needs is to be put in her place.
Right. And that's exactly, and I agree with that, that the men have a way of looking at women as objects or something to dominate.
Yeah.
And to dominate. Now, I happen to be married to a very strong woman. That ain't going to happen.
So. And I took a self-defense class with her, so I know she can...
Yeah, she does self-defense.
Take you out if she needs to.
God, that self-defense class was the worst because she came back from self-defense and she goes, choke me. Try to choke me. I go, I ain't choking you. And she's getting in this position. I'm just going, that's forget funny. It. You're scaring me. I ain't going to do this. She's gonna need practice. No, yeah. No. Not going to practice with that. I'm going to get hurt. So anyway, it's interesting that even this culture that has moved over to even Christian men,
mm-hmm.
too, that basically they have this ideology about the same thing about women are different and they're not equal.
Yeah, and that's a lifetime of conversations, but that's so hard of the man is the head of the household,
mm-hmm.
Which I think we're going to get into this soon, yeah. But being the spiritual head, there's just still this kind of dominance,
mm-hmm.
of being the one in charge, mm-hmm. and...
No, that's interesting. That's an interesting perspective. And also, too, taking you through this, and we'll get into that subject, is almost to the point that in the last two relationships that I remember that you were in that really broke your heart, I mean, to the point, sometimes I've had to pick Angela out literally from the ground because you were so hurt in these situations. And a lot of your hurts was... These were Christian men.
Mm-hmm.
This should be different. And the thing as a man, I felt like, how do I defend this? Because you're saying one thing. You're like, God is great. God is, you know, we're praying together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I heard when you start dating that you should not pray together. Really? Now, this is what I heard.
Oh, it's too intimate?
It's too intimate.
Mm.
And therefore, the trust and the walls are completely down when they hear someone praying for them.
That's
and
interesting.
Then basically, it's almost a manipulation to the woman to put the walls down.
Wow.
That's why, because if I had a daughter, I would say, don't pray with them until you know them. Isn't that weird? But it's another rule. Yeah, it's another. Because it gets really deep.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens sometimes.
It's emotional. That
they're emotional and they're getting so deep physically and so deep things that basically they trust. And yeah. Then and they say at the beginning, this is how I feel about these are my standards. Mm. And they go, well, let's pray. And then all of a sudden, boom, the standards are just gone.
Mm.
Well, thank God I don't have daughters. Thank God.
Lose your mind.
I know. I would go crazy. With me. Jeez. Just thinking about this, I'm getting tense.
I should note that Kevin is literally rubbing his back right now. Is it pain?
I know. It's terrible. Okay. So those relationships were very difficult for you.
Yeah, that was very painful. It was less because... of faith and more just I'm
it's
relationship stuff's hard.
Okay.
So, well, I'm willing to talk about it. I'm just okay. trying to think of how to talk about it.
Okay. So it's a 2-hour podcast.
Okay, I'll be concise. I mean, any betrayal of trust is hard, no matter who the person is and what they believe.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you trust somebody, when they have explicitly said, you know, there's a future with us.
Right.
This is how it's going to be. Yeah. I'm committed to you. Trust me.
Right.
Trust me. Let down your defensive walls because I'm feeling them and I want you to trust me. It's not fair for you to have those defenses up because they're because of people from before me that has nothing to do with me. Trust me, trust me, trust me. So then I trust.
Okay.
And then, you know, I'm vulnerable. My issues come out. I have my own emotional baggage.
Right.
And so I own that as part of those relationships. But yeah, I was devastated in both of those cases that you remember.
Yeah.
Because I just had, I believed I was in such a committed place and to be left is
in a safe place.
In a safe place.
That's what I believe a lot of women that want in a relationship is just to feel safe.
Yeah.
And
especially, I mean, I'm not going to go too much into childhood stuff, but I, you know, had a turbulent upbringing with, I love my parents, but they had a lot of hard times in their marriage.
Right.
And so I absorbed a lot of that pain. And so I was looking for stability.
Mm.
I wanted so badly to have my own family and for it to be a happy experience and not, you know, always at each other's throats. And
yeah. So now we move up because I think 5 or 6 years ago, you wanted to be married. You've always wanted to be married. I mean, everyone wants to be married. And
have not everyone.
Not everyone. Okay. But you wanted to get married, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was single, that's the thing. I wanted to be married. And it's funny because if you think about it, married people want to be single and you got single people wanting to be married.
The grass is green. Happy.
No one's happy. So anyway, but you met somebody a few years ago. Tell us about him.
Well, his name is Kayala.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a wonderful man. And he... someone asked me early on, well, for the first, like, several months, everyone who asked me about him, I'm like, oh, it's not going to work out.
Because,
again, my defenses were up,
right.
And I just didn't think we were connecting also.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found out later is that he was just taking his time instead of some of these guys in the past who had rushed in and wanted to be a white knight and save me from all of my emotional distress. He stayed at a distance,
mm-hmm.
and he just got to know me slowly,
okay.
which... I was very impatient. I wanted a commitment. I wanted to feel accepted and affirmed.
Yeah.
And he took his time. But his mom told me at one point, once Kayala decides that he loves you forever.
Okay.
And we've only been together for 3.5 years, but I think that his love seems pretty unshakable.
Right.
And that's coming from a very distrusting person who needed a lot of counseling. Years of counseling.
Joking about counseling.
Hmm?
Counseling's good. You.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of
but
people...
But you have to find the right one.
Okay, the right counselor.
Yeah.
And don't you have to also be really to own your own crap?
Oh, you have to do the work.
Yeah.
You have to cry, and you have to be angry, and you have to go into some dark places so that you can tunnel through and find the light on the other side.
No, and then sometimes the light on the other side is dim, but you got to go.
But it's better.
Because when I went through a divorce in 95, it was 5 years of counseling,
mm-hmm.
and 5 years of intense counseling,
mm-hmm.
because I just wanted to be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So these people that say counseling is a joke, I mean, it's a joke if you don't put anything into it.
Yeah.
So part of this relationship now that you're healthy,
mm-hmm.
or you're as healthy as you've ever been,
mm-hmm.
like me, I'm not completely healthy, that is because you put in the work.
Yeah, and I believe in this so much that I am now becoming a therapist.
Oh, wow.
I'm in school for music therapy.
Okay.
I'm combining my passion for music and this newfound interest in emotional and psychological healing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been amazing. But yeah, I highly recommend therapy for everyone because there's always something new to discover about yourself. It's just about knowing yourself better and how you work with people and how to do that better.
And if you're listening to the podcast that Angela asked me, which I'm totally impressed, to perform the wedding ceremony.
I hope. So you've earned it. Yeah. Well, you also told me years ago that you have earned it, and I never forgot that.
I said, if you get healed and you get married, I'm doing the wedding. I didn't put up with this crap for this many years.
Here's your prize.
Yes, I'm going to do the wedding. And I'll be so excited, and I'll be cheering and just saying, yes, we did it. Plural. It's all about me, because I'm narcissistic.
Oh, man.
So anyway, so if you look at this, what's different with him than the others? I mean, what?
Well, the first thing was that, as I mentioned, he took his time. He wasn't like, yeah, let's get married from right out the gate, which one of the guys I had been with previously, you know, within like a few weeks, he was talking about who was going to do our ceremony.
Oh, really?
And I was so happy because I was like, yay, I'm going to have stability in my life.
Yes. Yeah. Stability in two
this
weeks.
This one took 3.5 years, okay. So quite a bit longer.
Wow. And that's what you needed.
That's what we needed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not what you wanted.
No, I've been badgering him for a while. Like, is this going to happen?
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, the other difference, I don't know that this, I don't attribute this to anything anymore, but I know that it's kind of shocking for people when they hear that he is not a churchgoer and that he is in fact an atheist.
Right.
I think a lot of people are curious how that works if they're not going to the whole unequally yoked place.
Okay.
But I can say that it works because of his character. Mm. He believes in treating people with respect and dignity. And he feels so compelled to honor his commitments that even if he doesn't, you know, I remember he was looking for a new apartment at one point and decided not to go with one that was kind of underway. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, so move on to the next. He's like, no, I got to tell the guy. And I'm like, he doesn't care. He can get another tenant. And he's like, no, but you got to tell him.
Right.
So he so respects people's time and efforts. Mm-hmm. And it just translates in his actions.
Right.
And so I know, even with all my issues and my trust issues, that he is committed to me. I know that he is loyal. And I feel very confident about our partnership. And I know people would wonder, you know, well, that's not enough.
Yeah.
Like, don't you need to share a worldview? And I would say, essentially, we do. Even though I see everything as spiritual and he sees nothing as spiritual, which seems pretty incongruent.
Right.
We care about people. We care about living life well and with integrity. Mm. And I, you know, we've had those conversations about what's it going to look like when we have kids? Mm. How are we going to raise them?
Right.
And it's hard to know until we're there. But I think because I have been re-examining my own faith in the last several years, it may be easier for me than it would have been when I was younger and I felt very fundamentalist.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm actually excited about raising kids in an interfaith relationship because that tells the kids, hey, I don't actually have answers. Here's my best guess.
Right.
Here's what I know and what I believe. Here's what your dad believes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, do your best to figure it out.
You know, I want to ask you this question. I have a good friend that she has a daughter that is probably in her mid-20s, and she's really struggling with her daughter dating a Catholic. And he's not a practicing Catholic. And she's really going, but we raised her this way. We raised her this way. We raised her in a way to be a Christian, no matter. And it really is driving her crazy.
Sure.
And so I was wondering if what your perspective as a what her daughter's perspective would be. And what would you tell a mother that's going, okay, I raised her this way, but she's marrying a Catholic, or she's marrying an atheist, or she's marrying somebody that's not meeting my expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And they think this worst case scenario is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so what would you say to her?
Well, everyone's different, so it's hard to know what to say exactly. But I would say that your daughter is an adult and you have to let go. Mm-hmm. And that she'll have different ideas than the ones that you gave her sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that equally, you know, nobody has a full grip on the truth. Mm-hmm. So maybe some of the ideas that are passed down to us are wrong.
Yeah.
Certainly they are. And we never know which ones. Right. So that's why we always have to keep questioning and exploring. And I think that having relationships, especially close relationships with people who don't always believe the same things as us, is really important. Mm-hmm. How else are we going to grow?
Yeah. You know, no, it's definitely true. And the thing is, I would assume that when it comes to a relationship, is love your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Just accept your daughter for who she is and what she
did. Yeah, absolutely.
Because a lot of times when we project conditional love, you know, instead of unconditional love.
And then I think in that scenario, you know, if you're feeling like I have to perform a certain way in order for you to accept me,
right,
she'll never be able to be her true self, and your relationship won't be authentic.
Right.
It'll be performance based.
Yeah, which is tough.
Yeah.
It's always tough. And you're getting married in June, right?
July.
Oh, July.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a beautiful wedding. Yeah. Because I'm doing it.
It will be spectacular.
and it's going to be an outdoor wedding, which is at Sierra Madre.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Sierra Madre, which is an area.
Do you want to put the address?
Yeah, let's put the address. And where are you registered so we can put this?
Oh, man.
No, I'm excited about doing the wedding.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
Me too.
And so watching your story, so I want to end up in a talk like this. You've been through a difficult life. It started, you mentioned briefly about your childhood and how difficult it was, and then being assaulted as a young woman, and then seeing the objectification of women, and then being involved in certain ministries of helping the prostitutes, helping the strip dancers. There's a common theme with your life, you notice this. And then your experiences dating that have been, trust me, trust me. So apparently you have these incredible trust issues, or you used to, in going to counseling. So what advice or what steps would you tell somebody that goes, that's my story, Angela. That's my story right now. Because I'm in a relationship that I feel like an object, that I feel like he loves me, but it's very conditional. Or I've been insulted, and yes, I kept quiet too. And I can't find any Christian guys. That's a lot of meat that I just threw out. But how does one start with a relationship with God or looking at themselves? How does someone start valuing themselves?
Because
I think that's where it takes place.
Yeah.
Because once you value yourself, I would say, you're not going to remain quiet.
Yeah.
I would assume that you begin to believe in yourself. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just this guy that's talking all smack. But I would assume that was the case. What advice would you give them?
I would say that you should treat yourself the way that you treat somebody that you really love. Mm-hmm. And most people don't love themselves. Mm-hmm. And so you have to take a step back and almost pretend like you're someone else that's worth taking care of.
Mm-hmm.
And put yourself in a safe place if you're not in a safe place. That includes getting yourself away from people who are verbally abusive even. And surround yourself with a loving community. Seek health through counsel, through practicing self-care and your habits.
Mm-hmm.
Just be good to yourself because you're a child of God. You're a beautiful human and your worth is beyond what I could even, you know, the fanciest words I could throw at you wouldn't even come close.
Yeah.
Humans are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, I don't like people. I love people, but I don't like people. Yeah. I really don't. You know me, I'm a little bit of a misanthrope. But I love people. They break my heart because when I see the walls come down, when I see that vulnerability, when I see the child in somebody,
right.
When I see their joy, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, me too.
Yeah.
I get you.
Yeah.
And I think that when we're around people who make us feel less than, we can't be in that place because we always have to protect ourselves.
Yeah, it's not safe.
Yeah.
It's not safe. Well, thank you, Angela. I would appreciate you did an excellent job.
Did you talk too much?
No, you didn't talk too much at all. I thought I talked so much. Well, thank you for listening to the podcast. If this was interesting or you think this would help somebody else, just share it and say, look, we got a great interview from Angela. And if you want to respond to the podcast through our Facebook, you can respond to the podcast and say your comments. If they're negative, I'll just delete them. Or if you want to respond on the podcast as well. Hey, I'm just protecting you. Thank you, and hopefully you'll listen to our podcast next week. God bless you, and remember that every day is a gift from God. He's a wise man. See you next week.